Are you loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it, and right now they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.
Welcome back, everybody. You are here on the Up Your Brave show with Natalie Cutler-Welsh. My next guest is the amazing Aaron McLaughlin. He's been on the show before back in 2023 talking about navigating psychological triggers. That was right around the time of the election. I've brought him on now again, and it's so timely because we just had a monumental event in the world. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. But what we are going to talk about is PTSD, pre and post traumatic stress, and navigating truth in uncertain times. Welcome to the show, Aaron.
Hey, Natalie, so good to be here, and what a great title. It's going to be cool. We're going to pump this one.
We are. We're going to see where it goes. For those of you that may or may not know Aaron McLaughlin, based in Christchurch, I believe, has been coaching people since 1996, and for the last 5 years has also been officiating funerals as a celebrant. He is trained in clinical hypnosis and neuro-linguistic programming, NLP. Aaron has worked with clients with a very broad range of goals and challenges. His tagline is, if you can put your dream or challenge into words, then I can help you with it. Author of 3 books, trainer of health professionals in New Zealand and Australia. He's also been the past president of both New Zealand Association of Professional Hypnotherapists and the NZNLP Association. Aaron received his black belt in karate at the age of 19 and has worked as a professional photographer, as well as playing the violin for most of his life. In fact, when we jumped on this interview, he was playing the violin. Aaron has also worked the boards in theater, worked as a medical clown doctor in the Christchurch Hospital and rest homes, and on occasion has generated laughter with stand-up comedy. He was also a presenter for the Do or Die TV series, coaching families with major life challenges. Volunteering for community groups such as Voices for Freedom, running Courageous Conversation workshops, and pre-COVID, he was hosting a radio show on Christchurch Plains FM about sleep. So many talents, Aaron, got to say. Aaron's grounding over the last 33 years is his daily practice of transcendental meditation.
Transcendental meditation.
Transcendental meditation.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, there's so much in that. I love that you told us about the karate because I love to know the little things that we don't always hear about people, gifts and talents and hobbies. Let's start off. There's so much to talk about, but I want to go straight to the news. I guess by the time this interview airs, everyone will have heard about some news in America with President Trump, and I'm putting air quotes around this, getting shot. What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on the truth, the media, and how it affects people's happiness and health?
Great question. I think it's really pertinent. I think there are so many layers to this on a psychological level. I was on Twitter when it happened, and I can't work out the timing because we should have been, you know, it must have been early morning I was on. I can't remember quite. But within probably 15 minutes, there were the naysayers, the fake, all of that stuff going on. And I don't actually, my query nowadays is, what happened is important. It's what they do next because of it that's more important. And I think that's actually how we shape our internal, for want of a better word, narrative, is that what do we do in respect to what we've just heard? Now, the challenge with Twitter, with all the social media and that sort of thing, it's really compelling. If you've studied even just a few of these documentaries and you know, little vids on dopamine addiction and social media, it's very quick. You're in, and you're in up until your earlobes, excuse the pun after yesterday, but you're in up to your earlobes and without the blood, but you're engaged. You want to know more, you want to know more, you want to know more. And in between that is a whole bunch of really compelling stuff that you didn't expect to see. And it might be sexual, it might be selling you drugs, it might be selling you something else, but it's always selling the most important thing. And that's a distraction from my own personal sense of who I am, of my personal capacity to generate my own well-being. And my kind of own way of defining what is right for me and what I want to do next for myself and those that are closest to me. So I think, you know, and to be fair, it's a trigger in a sense with respect to what we've had to endure over the last 4 years with respects to political figures, with respects to, you know, the Biden craziness. You know, I mean, this guy's just, you know, they've just finally come out and said, well, he seems to be have dementia. Okay, so on personal, I've been working with my father for the last 18 months, who has been on the slippery slope of what I can not call anything else other than turbo dementia. Right. It's the saddest, most horrible thing for a person to, a family to watch and for someone to have to endure, because there are those moments where they suddenly realize. So to publicly have this man who's, you know, apparently looking after the free world, and as everyone's saying, has got his finger on the red button, which is not true at all. Actually, there are too many layers to go through for that. But fundamentally, is objectionable to, on such a high level. It's almost like elder abuse to the whole public, you know, because it's almost like it's making it okay to do this to someone who's obviously not able to do what he's supposed to do. And then this happens yesterday. And so, you know, that's what I would call, I mean, okay, go on, the layers and structures of this in terms of what I see personally, psychologically, is that what happened yesterday mm-hmm. is what we call in coaching a state interrupt. So what it means, it was kind of like when suddenly Jacinda got really tired, had no more fuel in the tank, and next minute, Chippy's there. Mm-hmm. The nicest, fluffiest, rainbow t-shirt guy eating hot dogs, you know, that you all love to hate from the guy next door because he can't play the drums, but he really wants to. That's Chippy. And it was a state interrupt because everyone suddenly goes, oh my God, what happened? And there's Chippy. And everyone goes, oh my God, Chippy's such a nice guy. He could never do anything horrible. And it's almost like yesterday. It's like we've been watching Biden trip over and fall over, and the memes after yesterday about Biden are horrific. But fundamentally, there's a sudden state interrupt, and now we're going, oh, there's this president. We've all been triggered into JFK assassination, into the Reagan attempt on his life, and all these, we're all triggered. So what does that do? It takes our attention so far out of where we are, and we start reading, we start exploring, because we are insatiably curious. You know, what we know now from the hippocampal research that Dr. Nels has done in his book, The Indoctrinated Brain, is that the hippocampus is insatiably curious, looking for the next thing to be aware of, the next thing to maybe have caution over, or the next thing that comes into physiology that it needs to deal with. That's if I've read his thesis properly. And here we are, we're insatiably curious. We want to know what happens next. We want to know what this means. And all the while, we're throwing all of our focus and concentration out. Mm. And in that moment, we become, I don't want to use the word, but I will, the victim of the external game. And in Sanskrit and in those ancient books and meditations, they talk about the maya, the illusion, being caught up in this, the duality, and everything becomes object rather than self-referral. So I'm waiting to happen what's next, and they'll tell me what the source of truth has to be, yeah? And then they'll tell me what I have to do next and what I have to believe next. And because I'm so open, this state interrupt, it stops me mid-tracks. It's actually hypnotic induction, believe it or not. There's a hypnotic induction called it's called the handshake interrupt. And so you go to shake someone's hand, and just as you're about to touch their hand, which is the normal process, you slightly pull your hand back and they go into a trance. Then you gently take that hand and you start talking to them. They go into a trance. Like 90% of people just go into this state of trance. It's called a state interrupt because you're interrupting the unconscious state and the unconscious focus, and suddenly you're gone. Then they implant the next thing. So with Chippy,
well, I think that's exactly right. That's, I mean, a lot of us, I feel like I'm somewhere in between wanting to be aware, but also I'm quite apathetic because, I mean, I just finished a yoga class with a friend of mine, and she would be one of my non-spiritual, non-woo-woo, non-entirely awake friends. And most of mine are like me, that we're spiritual and we're woo-woo and we're awake and all the things. She's not so much, but she's the first person that said to me, oh, you know, did you hear about Trump. And I was like, you know, right. You know, it could be that, or it could not. And I said, you know, they're just all players. They're all actors in a play like that. That's just my take on it. So in that sense, I feel like for me, I don't get consumed and overly concerned. And I certainly don't stir the pot of turmoil. Like, oh my goodness, did you hear about this? Did you hear about that? But I'm intrigued. I'm like, huh, I wonder what that's about. Okay. So they want us to look over here. Well, what's in the other corner? So I'm kind of curious, but very much taking everything with a grain of salt. And I don't know if that's the best approach, but that is my approach. And very untrusting, I would say, of whatever we are being told that happened. I usually think, okay, well, that's not what happened. So good to know. What is the long-term impact of this on people? Like this pattern interrupt, as you called it. I mean, it's something probably a strategy they've been using for much longer than the 4 years we keep talking about.
They've been using it forever. You know, an assassination, for example, I guess is a nation state interrupt, because everyone's comfortable. Everyone's in a state of comfort. Everyone's in a state of being paternalized and looked after, regressed, if you like, into that safety of, you know, dad's looking after me or mum's looking after me. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but it's literally, you know, what we saw after the mosque event in Christchurch was there was this, I mean, as I uncomfortably call it, the Mother Teresification of Jacinda Ardern, where suddenly she,
Absolutely. We
are told by the media that everyone is traumatized. We are told now that we are all the team of 5 million and that we are all expected to do this thing. And then suddenly there's this woman who becomes the mother of the, and people are wondering, well, why did so many people do as they were told during COVID? It's like, well, because everyone was told how to think, feel, and behave following that event in Christchurch.
Following that traumatic event. That's part of it,
right? And another state interrupt. I mean, yeah. No one expects that sort of thing in New Zealand. No one. It was a global state interrupt because we went to Italy in early 2019. And when people asked us where we were from, like they couldn't hear it in the accent, but they asked us where we were from. And as soon as we said New Zealand, they go, first thing they said was, oh, Jacinda Ardern. It was, and she said, hero of New Zealand. You know, it was like, wow, that was mind blowing. And that's the media. I believe she was on Time magazine, I think, wearing a piece of clothing that related to the incident. And I think that, you know, all due respect, you know, that's media, that's marketing, I guess, that's telling a story. And yet, I've always seen things structurally. It sounds crass, I guess, a little bit amoral in some ways, but I'm not as interested in the story. I'm more interested in the structure of how these things come about and what happens next.
Yeah.
And what the language that's being used is. I mean, having done professional photography, you know, just how we hold a camera with respect. Like if I'm looking at you and I hold the camera eye to eye, I'm on an equal par. But if I suddenly get down on my knees to photograph up, you're now in power. If I'm photographing down, I'm now empowering over you. And that's just visual structure. So if you think about movies, it's that whole thing. And so you're selling ideas, you're selling, and then you interrupt the ideas halfway and you drop a new idea in and everyone goes, it's like Sponge World. It's just that insatiable curiosity which grabs it.
But then people kind of bear the brunt to a certain extent of all this, because so what we're talking about today, PTSD, and something you highlight, I know, when we talk about this, is it's not just post-traumatic stress disorder, it's pre- and post-traumatic stress. So let's talk a little bit about that, because one of the questions I've got, and I'd love to jump straight to specifics, is how does somebody know if they are still, like, they might have done some therapy and done some healing, but how does somebody know if they're still, you know, holding on to that, or I don't know what the phrase is, you know, running with that trauma, they've still got it within them. What are some of those signs? Maybe it is from the whole Jacinda thing, or maybe it's something else that happened in their life. What are some of the ways they can tell if they're still hanging on to that?
So it's a really good question, Natalie. The first question I ask someone, there's a number of things that happen in what I call structural psychology, which is the structure of how we think things, which comes from NLP, clinical hypnosis and psychology. And that is that from the research they've done with ex-vets, ex-vets are the best, and having done work with ex-army, but also having done work with some pretty horrific traumas. And I've worked with a lot of people kind of as a last resort for them. And I'll sit down with them and say, listen, I need to ask you a question. And it goes like this. When you reflect back on the original event, are you seeing it through your own eyes or do you feel removed? And that's the question. So generally, if you're talking to someone who's been in a horrific event, if that event is either resolved or on the path to resolved, meaning their original emotional kind of experience has reduced markedly, that will mean that they are somewhat removed or fully removed. It's almost like what we'd call third person perspective. So I'm a fly on the wall. I can see myself.
Okay.
I can see the event and a bit of myself or something like that. First person is that I'm in my body. I'm still there and I can be triggered straight away.
Right.
Now I've worked with people and listen, this isn't a judgment on therapy processes or anything. It's just different therapy. Like Rogerian therapy was so cool because Carl Rogers sat down with people and he just said, so tell me what happened. And then he'd go, and then he'd just literally repeat back in his own words what they said happened. And then he'd say, so, and he just kept doing that for an hour and a half. And then suddenly, often, that person would have an epiphany. Because they would suddenly hear their own story being repeated back. So they were hearing a third person perspective. And so their brain suddenly goes, oh, wait a minute, there's two perspectives. There's his perspective, and he's not emotional about this, and there's my perspective, and I'm feeling emotional. And the party brain goes, well, I want that. And so they stopped. So they kind of almost jump out of their body and go third person as if they're the guy Carl Rogers or a Rogerian therapist, and then they're suddenly looking back at themselves. And when we model people have successfully overcome major trauma, we know this has just happened either naturally or something else has triggered them to pop out.
I'm so pleased you mentioned that because when you said earlier, you know, when I ask people to think of a traumatic time, straight away I went to the Christchurch earthquake, straight away I saw myself at the laundry line. But here's the thing, I saw myself, you know, and I was like, oh, good. Because when I tell that story, I'm not in my body. I'm seeing myself at the laundry line being thrown to the ground, crawling towards my son to rescue him from the garage. But I'm watching it like a movie. So that's good. So
the second query would be, great. So is there any sticky emotional aspect to that? So some people can be third person seeing the event, and then we just clean up. So we just say, like, is there still any emotional quality to that you don't want? Because some people, here's the thing, some people say, well, I don't want to forget that event. Here's the thing, if I'm in first person associated trauma, triggerable trauma, I can't forget that event, but that's not helping me. If I've got third person non-emotional or minor emotional viewpoint of the event, then I have multiple perspectives by which to view this event. I can jump in if I want, but I'm in a safety space where I can see it third person. That means I have much more objectivity, which gives me much more capacity to learn and understand the meaning of that past event or whatever.
Yeah. That is so helpful and possible segue back to where we began, because a lot of us are third party observers to a lot of traumatic events on a global level, right? As well as on a national level. And I guess in a way, am I correct in saying that if we can view it from these multiple perspectives, like me going, well, yeah, he could have been shot, you know, I do air quotes, can't help myself, or, you know, maybe it was, you know, just another like a done from a good perspective, like, you know, the white hats or the goodies or whatever you want to call them, you know, to wake people up a little bit more, or maybe it was a negative, you know, thing. And I can kind of see it from, it could be this, or it could also be that, or it could actually be this other thing. So I'm not tied to any, I don't know if that's a fair call segue, but I can see your point.
Can I just speak to that for a moment? And in NLP or neurolinguistic programming, which I must say is not a therapy process, it is a modeling process. Meaning if someone comes to me and they've got a phobia, I'm not going to have a big conversation about them, about spiders. I'm going to have a conversation about how do they know it's time to start doing that phobia? What then happens then? What then happens? And then what then happens? And then we'll stuff that thing up. You know, we'll just stuff that up. And so it sounds a little bit clinical, and it totally is in one respect, but it just means that I'm not getting engaged in what I, you know, irreverently call the Shortland Street of their story, because they've told that 4 million times already. Yeah. I'm only interested in, well, how do you know it's time to do that, and how do you do it in your head? I don't care about the spider. I don't care where you are. Like, is it a color picture or is it black and white? Is it the size of Godzilla or is it like the size of an ant? How do you run that in your head and let's muck it up for you and replace it with something that works for you? So where the post-traumatic stress comes in, it's really important. So that's your triggered first-person associated memory that hasn't been resolved.
Right.
The pre-traumatic is that, and that's what we can kind of call anxiety. Okay. So if I've got an unresolved stuff around, a good example, I'm of the time when JFK was assassinated, and I remember that, and there was so much emotion because of, even though we're not there, mm-hmm. the one thing about the media, it has the ability to repeat. Not many people know, but after 9/11,
because everyone knows where they were when 9/11 happened, right?
Exactly. Or, you know, or Lady Diana, those sorts of things. But what a lot of people don't know is that the thousands upon thousands of children that had to be debriefed following that event, and not just the event, but all the media, because every time the child saw it on TV, they thought it was happening again. So when they heard the screamings, when they saw the thing, when all that, there's documentation on this, is that the media is very good at, it's kind of like mass formation or structural hypnosis, which is the media repeats with emotion. And part of clinical hypnosis, if you're doing suggestion hypnosis, is you repeat an idea over and over. Now, if someone's in the post-trauma of, oh my gosh, that thing happened, and then they repeatedly see, it's like last night on Twitter, every second post is another shot of Trump, another shot of what happened to the shooter, which wasn't pleasant, and all those sorts of things. So we're repeatedly given. Now, the mirror neurons of the brain switch on and go, oh, my God, this is hideous. Oh, my God, I don't feel good about this. So the repetition in the over the short to medium to long term creates the emotion, because the body cannot fathom the distinction between real and fantasy. So what it'll do is it'll just start responding in kind, viscerally, to what the images coming into the mind repeatedly are. So with respect to pre-traumatic stress, what that really means is when we have unresolved stress from the past, i.e. a trauma, that can be easily triggered, and then we'll project that possible fear into the future, i.e. something happened, lockdowns, for example, that's post-traumatic. Some people are still feeling very traumatized by that. Then they hear on the radio that it could happen again. So we go into pre-traumatic stress overload or syndrome, which means we're starting to already viscerally imagine and experience from within this possible thing out there. So the strategy to deal with this is switch off your social media for 2 or 3 days. It's really important because it's so addictive. The guys who invent it won't let their kids use it. That's how addictive it is. It's terrible. So what we want to do is we want to remove ourselves from it. Or if it's a part of your business or your work and you need to be connected, you need to diary in the times. Secondly, if you're getting off it and you're diarying in the times, then you need to get an opposite analog experience. Analog being in the body, barefoot, get onto some dewy ground, get outside with your vitamin D, go and hug a tree. It sounds ridiculous, but it's, you know, what do they call it? Forest bathing. So get outside fundamentally, walk, take the dog or just walk. Actually, Paul Bremer was interesting, his favorite person this morning, and they're talking about exactly the same, even for Alzheimer's and dementia, is get to bed early, switch off your IT, switch off all of your tech at least half an hour before bed, switch off half of the house lights half an hour before bed, have a chamomile or just a warm milk or something, but switch all the external distractions off. And then the brain will start to create melatonin. The most important, I wouldn't like to call it specialized, but it's been a huge focus for me for years because I had crippling insomnia when I had paraquat poisoning, is that sleep is the key. You know, sleep is divine. Sleep is where we do the most important work. We think we're working hard when we're awake and stuff. When we go to sleep, the brain, the body system is doing phenomenal work. But if you're getting to bed at 10:30, 11, 11:30, you are missing the most important part of the sleep cycle, and that's between 10 and 2. In Ayurveda, ancient Hindu, it's called a pitta time, which is when the whole digestion beefs up to digest, cleanse, and move everything through.
It's so important to, that's right, to get to bed at a reasonable time. So what I'm hearing is it's not just the number of hours of sleep that you have, it also is the time that you go to sleep. So Aaron, if you've just joined us, you're listening to the Up Your Brave show. I'm talking to Aaron McLaughlin. We're talking about pre and post-traumatic stress disorder and navigating truth in uncertain times. Thank you, Aaron, for sharing some thoughts just then around, I guess I would call them success or sanity strategies for people, because it, in today's world, it's so easy with events that happen in our individual lives, as well as any global phenomena with the whole social media thing. You hear about things so quickly and then you get bombarded. So you're telling us get into nature, turn things off, get into the real world.
One last one, which is really important, I think, and it's, you know, I've done a lot of talks in Christchurch, and the thing that people come up to me weirdly and say helped them the most is the brain organizes time in a linear fashion, meaning it has a direction for the future. So it imagines these things happening out in the future. So very quick example, I know that I'm cooking dinner tonight. Now, if I feel anxious about that, what I will do is I will picture myself, literally imagine myself, not be in my body, third person. So I see myself after dinner smiling because dinner is done. That's it. So the thing that we need to, well, but the thing I've found extremely useful for many people, myself, my family, in the courageous conversation groups I've been hosting, is if we can get our head around this concept that anxiety or pre-traumatic stress syndrome is about the future, about a possible or diaried event. Now, if we see ourselves on the other side of that event, ridiculous as it sounds, the deep part of us that's asking this question constantly, am I going to survive, suddenly gets a message that, yes, I do. When we do anxiety or PTSD, as in pre, we are actually imagining being first person in the worst case scenario and feeling overwhelmed, not knowing what to do. Oh my God, what am I going to do? How's this going to work? So the cortisol goes up and we aren't even there yet. You know, it hasn't even happened yet. We're doing it in our head. So if that's how we do anxiety or pre-TSD, the antidote is to go beyond that perceived event, even if it's an hour, a day, beyond it, and see ourselves and make this picture larger than life. Mm-hmm. So make it compelling. And as a lot of women have said to me, can I add sparkles? Seriously, they ask me that. Can I add sparkles? I said, you can have a little unicorn net if you like, but fundamentally, it sounds crazy, but whatever you can do to that image that is beyond this future situation where you can see yourself smiling, and it's smiling simply, one reason, it's done. Yeah. Not I did amazing, not I'm the most amazing person in the world or anything like that. It's just done. The whole flight or fight, everything, you'll feel it, everything starts to drop a little. And as soon as your brain, the subconscious knows that that's how this works, it will start to detach from the problem of the PTSD. And then
Aaron, that is such a simple and but so impactful. It's like there, I just wrote down, you know, see yourself on the other side, see yourself smiling. I actually do that with my daughter. She was doing a lot of triathlons and I always get nervous with the cycling. And as a mom, I would just picture her smiling. You know, sometimes she did have a medal around her neck in my visualization anyway, but smiling, you know, healthy, happy at the end of the race. Like that was my focus because otherwise you can drive, you can catastrophize things.
Well, and here's the thing. If we are doing anxiety, what we can call anxiety, if you think of, let's say we're all designed for self-preservation. Think of it this way. So the part of our brain, the insatiable, do with this. How am I going to do this? So if I get into my car, there's this a quantity of, let's call it 0 to 10. And it's the calibration of caution. So if I get into the car, I'm about 2 out of 10. I stick my safety belt on. Because I'm 2 out of 10 caution. Anxiety and habitual anxiety is sitting up 8 to 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 10 all the time. But it's part of a very natural self-preservation circuitry, which is self-preservation. So when we start to acknowledge that it's just part of a greater structure of, well, am I going to survive? Then we can start calibrating it a little bit better and notice nuance. If we can notice nuance, then we can notice, well, actually, I'm only about 6.5 today. Awesome. Then we project ourselves, see ourselves out there in the future, and we'll notice it'll drop to 3 or 4. So the more we repeat these, it's just self-repeat. And that's the mother of skill. You just keep repeating stuff that actually strategically works. I mean, marathon runners don't imagine being, you know, at the 20th mile. and you know, they just don't. They start with the end in mind, having crossed the line and feeling like, well, I'm still alive. I'm not blind. I can still breathe and my legs are still connected. So there's that, you know, I survive. And that's the motivator. You'd never get motivated by being first person locked into a marathon situation, you know, in the last 10 miles or whatever. It just doesn't work.
I think starting with the end in mind and visualizing what you truly want is golden guidance for the exact time that we're living through, for whether it be some micro scenario in your life or like the state of humanity. I think visualizing and seeing it, what you truly desire, not just focusing on all the ins and outs of did you hear this and did you hear that. Thank you so much, Aaron, for joining us today. I would love to ask you, where can people connect with you or follow you if they want to learn more? I know you've got an event coming up as well.
Yeah, I've got an event on the 27th. That's a Saturday. It's a workshop, just working on all of this stuff. It's going to be a little bit loose, but it'll be a lot of fun because what I like to do in groups is just work a little bit off what people are needing. But it's basically around literally what we've been talking about, you know, how to unclutter, how to de-stress and traumatize ourselves. I'm also, I've got a Twitter account, which is Aaron, AaronMMNZ. Mm-hmm. So it's AaronMMNZ. And then my website is aaronm.co.nz. And listen, you know, there's heaps of little videos that I've made wearing stupid T-shirts with crazy backgrounds and stuff because I used to do clowning and I don't take too much that seriously. But all the strategies in there are strategies that I've had a lot of feedback and people find them really useful. So there's probably about, well, there's 10 pages or something of videos. So, I mean, go and have a look. And there's a few articles that I've written and stuff like that. So, and if you've got any questions, just email me, drop me an email or drop me a Twitter, just off the website or out of Twitter. And I mean, on Twitter, I don't post much. I just push Linda Wharton's work because what she's doing is off the charts and so courageous and the RCR stuff as well. So you guys are doing amazing work. So that's kind of what I'm focusing on.
Well, thank you so much. We love Linda, the work she's doing. It's so essential. And we love the work we're doing. Okay. Thank you everyone for listening. We've been talking to Aaron McLaughlin today, all about pre and post-traumatic stress.
Thank you for tuning in to RCR Reality Check Radio. If you like what you're listening to, dislike what you're listening to, either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We would love to hear from you, so connect with us today.